Kevin Fishbane.
I got Fishy Business, K. Fishbane.
Fishy Business?
Fishy Business. What I call him whenever I have him on the show. Fishy Business.
Bears beat writer for The Athletic.
Obviously, sports radio of the year in the state of Illinois. You don't get that by accident. He does a wonderful job for those guys.
I'm not leaving to cover the Detroit Lions.
All right, well, good.
Kevin Fishbane talking Bears.
Hey, Kevin. Kevin Fishbane from The Athletic.
I love your name.
It's a great name.
Yeah, great name.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
You are listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday, presented by your local Ford dealers and IDOT, It's Not a Game, Illinois.com. Dan Bernstein here with Marshall Harris, getting you set. Just vibing.
Oh, that's smooth.
Mm-hmm.
That's that smooth. Get us on in here. Get Kevin. I mean, Kevin's probably bobbing his head, too.
This is a song that is from one of my favorite rap groups, Atmosphere. And it's called, God, it's something with fishing in it.
Oh.
Oh, looking at you.
So that's why I picked that, yeah.
Yeah, there's always another layer.
I like to be a little funny myself, you know?
Fishing Blues, great song.
Fishing Blues. Trust me, I have had them. I know Kevin Fishbane is just pulling up to Hallis Hall and getting his machinery all hooked up. So
stop me if you've ever heard this before, but Kevin Fishbane was dealing with traffic today.
It was... Just weird stuff going on. There's like a stalled semi at one point. LSD is all torn up. All torn up.
That's why I avoid it. I stay local, take the train maybe, but I just get on the big roads. No, I'm good on that.
Really? I've
made those journeys, but I try to keep them minimized.
You have a car, though.
Yeah, I have a car.
Okay.
It's a 2008.
No, I'm not judging you.
It's got 85,000 miles.
I'm not judging
on
you or your car.
No, I'm just saying, do the math on that and you can understand.
A lot of people live in the city and don't have cars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But that's fine. You know, I'm not, like I say, not judging. Kevin Fishbane is sponsored by the Illinois Department of Transportation. It's not a game, Illinois.com, and by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric for all the right reasons. Call 866-4-SEASONS. He is with us on the Circus Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. Twitch.tv/Chicago670 score. Hello, Fish. What's up?
Hello, guys. Happy Friday.
You too.
It is a happy Friday, Kevin. I'm glad you feel that way. I want to say we're happy about the prospect of the Bears, you know, showing improvement. How confident are you that the steps will be taken to, first of all, win the game, but second of all, to have people believing in the competence of the offense?
I think that latter point, Marshall, is like the big thing you want to get out of this. Like, you want to get out of Sunday feeling good about the direction of things. Like, my two biggest things this week were it can't get worse, you would think, and you're playing a defense that has shown some, you know, some leaks. Like, there should be some opportunities against Indianapolis on Sunday. And you just got to imagine that there's going to be adjustments. Now, I don't know if we're going to see some kind of big overcorrection from Shane Waldron. But, you know, just like a little thing, you know, on Monday asking Matt Eberflus about Travis Homer's role. And he kind of says, you know, I want to mix up the backs a little bit more. So little things like that. DeAndre Swift yesterday taking some responsibility for his lack of production. So you just feel like these little things are going to eventually build up. But they should, you would think, have a better performance on Sunday in Indianapolis.
We've been on Keenan Allen watch for the better part of the season. Kevin, what can you tell us about the level of optimism there that this is not just a couple of weeks thing and that he'll be back soon versus this sounds like something that's going to plague them all season and it's going to be a up and down kind of chart?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a ton in common with Keenan Allen, but I have dealt with some plantar fasciitis and it's you know, it's brutal. You know, that's kind of some of the feelings that he's having, some of the pain that he's dealing with. It is probably going to be a lot of a pain management thing. The good news as of right now is he's not on IR, so they don't think this is a four-week thing. Now, obviously, if something happens, you know, sometimes they make those moves on Saturday, so I want to be careful not to, you know, just jump to the point that it's good news right now. We'll find out the injury report in about an hour and see where he's at for Sunday, but this might be the type of thing that they have to manage for most of the season. When you think about his role, what he does for a living, and what he means to the offense. So obviously that's frustrating because, you know, he didn't miss any. This came up like the end of training camp. And he powered through that first game. He was in and out of the injury 10, I think, once, but led the team in targets. So Like, it's one of those things where I know there's a lot of, oh, of course this happened to Keenan Allen. How could he not see this coming? Well, like, he did get pretty far without something coming up. So, you know, yeah, we'll hopefully we'll get a little bit more clarity from Matt Eberflus later this afternoon.
We played much of what Shane Waldron said yesterday. There were some questions that he didn't really answer, almost like he was kind of running out the clock on some of what you were asking in that room. I don't know if he just wants the performance to speak for itself, or if maybe he is waning confidence in his offense. It had better be better.
Dan, I think I mentioned this in February. I think I might have joked with you guys that from a press conference standpoint, you're all going to miss Luke Getsy. You can say what you will about Luke Getsy, but you're all going to miss his press conferences. I think that this, like, we see this a lot when an offense is struggling, when a coach is, you know, got to answer for a lot of those struggles. And he's got to do so in a very delicate fashion in terms of he doesn't want to throw any of his players under the bus. And he wants to kind of talk in a lot of, you know, vague manners about different things just to get to the next week. Right. Like, I just think it's so many things went wrong on Sunday. So many things have gone wrong in the first 2 weeks that I do think that was a bit of 15 minutes of what's the fastest way to get it to just move on and figure things out on our own and not tell these guys what we're trying to fix necessarily, not tell these guys exactly who missed their assignments or who didn't execute, not tell these guys exactly what plays I called that shouldn't have called or what personnel needs to be better, things like that. So I think you might have seen a little bit of that during his Thursday press conference, because I think you make a good point. I think there is a sense of, let me just get this fixed behind the scenes if I can, and that the results in the field will show, and then we can maybe have more detailed and a little bit more fun at future press conferences. Again, you hope the offense gets there so you can have some of those conversations, because if it's bad, again, those things are going to get more pointed and it's going to be harder and harder to just kind of, I don't want to say necessarily gloss over things, but try to take different routes where you're not talking about any specifics.
Yeah, the specifics have not been good so far. Looking at the offense, help me with this. Bayless Jones Jr. is a running back, right? But he used to be a receiver, but now he's back practicing with the receivers. Help run me through this. I just want to make sure I understand what's going on.
You know, it's funny, Marshall, because watching that game and seeing how bad the run game was, I had a thought in Houston, like, you know, it might not be a bad idea to give a carry to somebody like Bayless Jones. It's like, nobody, you know, just because he's got that full head of steam when he hits the line, like, maybe you could use somebody like that with the run game going so poorly. Obviously, the coaches want to maybe move him back to receiver. Now, you go back to the Keenan Allen point. Is that related to that? Is they just want kind of another body that they could go to, another player they could go to? I mean, Tyler Scott wasn't really used at all in the game last
week.
What
happened to him? What happened to Tyler Scott?
You know, I mean, the quick answer, Dan, should be, well, they got Roma Dunes and Keenan Allen. Like, they don't need to have a Tyler Scott. And then the follow-up to that is, then they got DeAndre Carter, who has just been better and offered more to the offense than Tyler Scott did. I'm surprised that it's gotten to this point. I thought we saw a lot of flashes from him here and there during his rookie season. We know he's got something that you can't teach, which is speed. But there's also something, you know, look, he was a fourth-round pick, right? So, like, I want to be able to, you know, temper expectations with that bar, but you expect someone like him to make the type of progress in this offseason where that he could be used in a game when you would love to be able to take the top off the defense, when you love to be able to have that speed and get those explosive plays. Like, that's
why
they
drafted
him. That's
what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know, Dan. Like, I think it could be just as simple that DeAndre Carter came in and is showing more promise. And to Carter's credit, he's made a lot of nice plays for them on the offensive side of the ball. And I think I mentioned this with you guys last week, that Carter's best career season was with the Chargers and Chris Beatty, who is the current Bears receivers coach. So there's a relationship there. There's a comfortability that Carter has with the scheme, I think, and Beatty has trust in him that Carter can play a lot of spots. So, but yeah, I mean, but you step back and you could, similar to Bayless Jones, you want a guy like Tyler Scott to be involved. You want a guy like Roshan Johnson, who you drafted, to be involved more in his second season. So, you know, maybe we'll see more personnel shakeups this week, because the personnel that they used against Houston didn't necessarily lead to production.
You think the the way they're playing in terms of you talked about personnel, the groupings, maybe using more tight ends. Do you think everything's been on the table this week, or do you think they're just like, we need to fix what's going on up front? And it has not as much to do with the personnel groupings.
Yeah, I think that the offensive line, it does start there. Like, I think that's number one. The only personnel kind of question I have is the running backs. Like, it just seems odd to me that Khalil Herbert should only get two carries in a game. It seems odd to me that you're just not going to use Roschon Johnson at all.
Right.
Especially when, like, nothing's working with your starting running back, why not try something else? So that's kind of the room. Like, last week we talked about the tight end room. They made that switch. Okay, so, like, you know, maybe the running back room is where we see the switch. Maybe you see 5 to 7 carries to Herbert. Maybe you see 3 to 4 carries. Maybe Roschon Johnson returns to his third down back role. And the thing with Travis Homer, it's like, I don't think Travis Homer was bad. Like, his job is to go pass protect. And he had one of the few good runs of the whole night last week. I just think that, like, Roschon Johnson, you would expect to have a higher ceiling considering who he was when you drafted him, some of the things he showed last year. So maybe that's a way that they mix things up personnel-wise would be the backfield.
Are they ready for more stunts and games and twists and extra green dog blitzers up front? Because until they prove that they are ready for it, my suspicion is that they'll keep seeing it.
Yeah, you're right. And they're going to have to get ready for it. Like, it goes back to, like, it just can't be worse than it was against Houston. Now, we'll see if Latu can go for Indianapolis. They already are without Buckner, so they could be, you know, they're not going to have the guys up front that Houston had. But, like, I knew that Houston's defensive ends were going to cause problems. I did not expect Houston's defensive tackles to do what they did as well. I mean, that whole line and the linebackers were just running free all game long. When you rewatch that, every single tackle, a linebacker, and it wasn't just linebackers making plays 3, 4, 5 yards past the line of scrimmage. They were making plays at the line of scrimmage and behind it. So this offensive line has to do a better job of recognizing those things. It goes to the center, it goes to the guards, it goes to Caleb Williams being able to call those things out. So, I mean, that's going to be paramount for them, is that offensive line just has to do a better job because the timing is off. There's no abilities for plays downfield. There's no run game to speak of. The best plays the offense has run in the first 2 weeks are when Caleb Williams gets a snap and is able to hit those quick out routes. And to Caleb's credit, he's hitting them well. He's accurate with those throws. He's gone from, you know, opposite hash mark, opposite sideline, hitting those guys in stride. But that's it. That's, like, all the offense has had outside the slant to DJ Moore on third down that you could really point to as being productive. So it starts with that offensive line to give him some more time. And to do that, they have to be able to recognize those twists and stunts in games.
Kevin, as much as we've hammered the offense, and rightly so, the defense has gotten so much praise. I'm curious as to what they feel like they're doing best right now and how they're looking at Anthony Richardson as a threat to run, pass, explosive plays, but also put the ball in harm's way from on occasion.
Yeah, well, so what they've done best, you've heard a lot this week here from players and coaches talking about how they handled those stopping the Texans when Texans cross midfield. Like, the Texans get across midfield and the Bears make a stop, especially in the second half. And then, of course, the big play Andrew Billings made by the goal line. So I think they really are proud of the fact that, yes, the Texans were able to kind of move the ball a little bit, but then they got those stops and they kept them off the scoreboard. With Richardson, you know, you go back and you look, Stroud was able to get outside the pocket a few times in the first half when the Bears lost contain, and that's when he made a few of his big plays. That's when they got Nico Collins open. So with Richardson, that's going to be key. You know, if there's one level of the defense you want to see make some plays this week, it's the safeties. Like, is this the week we get the Jaquan Brisker big play in the football? Is this the week we get the Kevin Byard interception? Because Richardson, as we know, can launch that ball downfield. So, like, that, this could be a game that's going to test the safety. So it's going to be keeping him inside the pocket, keeping that contain with him, and avoiding those big plays because they gave up a few explosives last week in the first half against Houston.
Kevin Fishbane, much appreciated as always. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk next week.
All right. Take care, guys.
That is Kevin Fishbane of The Athletic. As you heard Matt Eberflus say, as the Sports Writer of the Year, you don't win an award like that by accident. They don't just give those things out to anybody, damn it. When we come back, Adam Studzinski may not be here, but his work is here. He has pieced together with the brick and mortar magic of radio, the solid wall of sound. It comes your way next on The Score.
You will hit a wall, hit a wall, hit a wall, hit a wall, hit a wall.
The wall?
The wall.
The wall?
Wall to wall, brother.
You're breaking the wall!
This wall.
The wall.
We get you ready for Bears games by making sure that if you felt, boy, you know, I was so busy, I was pulled in so many directions, I was trying to get back to the podcast, but we're going to make sure you didn't miss what really matters when it comes to knowing what you need to know for your Chicago Bears as they get prepared for an opponent. We call it the Solid Wall of Sound, and we use turgid and dramatic football music. On Monday, Anthony Heron said he was very concerned about how confused the Bears' offensive line was against the Texans.
It's one thing to not go into the game expecting the percentage of blitz that you face from that opponent, but the technique just seemed off too frequently. You got multiple interior offensive linemen. Yes, we're all mad at Nate Davis because he's missing practice. Tevin Jenkins is burying his head on Coleman Shelton, the center. Coleman Shelton is burying his backside on the ground anytime he collides with a defender. And yes, Nate Davis is doing the same thing as well, where preferably as an offensive lineman, especially one of the interior guys, because as a defensive lineman, what we want to do, we want to make the O-line overreact. So whether it's a twist stunt with the down lineman or if we have a game coming with a delayed blitz, like they used a number of delayed blitzes from the second level with the Texans last night, you want to get one or multiple of those offensive linemen to really be occupied. You want a two-for-one as a defensive lineman to get multiple guys occupied with you and then not allow someone else to become the looper or the delayed blitzer where the offensive line is occupied with his upper body, with his hands, with his shoulders, with his head. Once you see that lineman get his face mask into a defensive lineman, that allows that opportunity to now create a short corner for that looper who's going to come around or for that blitzer who's coming on what essentially turns into a green dog. That happened so frequently last night. That's very correctable from a technique perspective. It surprises me how frequently that happened in the game last night.
And then on Tuesday, Patrick Manley joined us to explain he wants the Bears to run the ball downhill more.
What I mean by that is put Mercedes Lewis in. I'm almost finished with the all 22, and three of their best runs are positive runs. Mercedes Lewis is in the game, and they're getting double teams up front with Darnell Wright. You know, they need to get back to me, that power game with those guys up front, kind of coming off the ball. There were a few runs to the left where Braxton Jones is going against Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter. He's getting blown up. Swift has got to cut it up, and you've got no yardage. So I think you've got to just kind of simplify the run game for those guys and figure out what their strengths are. And I think it's that. I think it's just coming downhill more. And then for the passing game, you know, obviously I'm not an expert in that, but I can tell you more about O-line, but it just seems that, you know, one is protection to get him comfortable. So when you get the four down rushers on him, he's very, very comfortable. They've got to get better at blitz pickup. They've got to get better blitz recognition. They've got to get better at technique up front. That's the biggest thing for me for O-line wise. But the run game will help this team, will help Caleb get him, keep him in, you know, third and short, second and manageable. That to me is the biggest thing, is just come downhill in the run game. And that to me is the strength of these guys. Tevin Jenkins likes to do that. Darnell Wright's very good at double teams. So anybody he's got next to him, they're going to move a lot of people off the ball.
Also Tuesday, our regular Bears guest, TJ Edwards, the linebacker, asked about sort of the heavy feeling in the locker room that was pervasive after Sunday's loss.
I mean, I don't think it's one of those things where people are looking at it as a setback. You know, it's the NFL, right? Sometimes the other team beats you, and that's kind of the way it goes. But I think what we're encouraged about is it's all controllables in our end. And I think, you know, when you lose, right, your expectations are so high because that's kind of the standard that we've set here. That's the culture that we've built. And so when, you know, those things don't go the way they should, you know, everyone, obviously, you know, no one's jumping for joy or anything like that, but we want to get answers. We want to figure out kind of what happened and how we can get better from it. But I think, you know, coming in Monday, you know, we got back at, about 4:15 in the morning. So, you know, a little bit of sleep, and then coming in Monday around noon, we got to watch the tape as a team and be critical and move on. You know, that's what it's about, because, you know, no one's going to feel sorry for you. No one's going to feel bad for you. There's another game this Sunday. So we're ready to go, and we're excited about it.
Later, Edwards told us how important Andrew Billings has been for the defense.
Big Bill, I think he's always been dominant. You know, I think people are just starting to recognize it a little bit more, see him a little bit more. But you want to just talk about a immovable object, man. That's Big Bill. You know, he does all the dirty work. You know, playing D-line in the NFL in general is one of the most selfless, you know, positions in the league, because you're just taking on 600 pounds every single play and kind of have to deal with it at times. And those dudes are so valuable to us. But I am really happy for him that he's kind of getting some praise, as he should, man. He's a beast, man. We need him, and he does so much for us. He really does.
Said that the forced fumble in that situation is everything that Matt Eberflus says the HITS principle is about, of taking every play with time on the clock as seriously as you possibly can, and always knowing that no matter what's going on, no matter where your opponent is, no matter what the scoreboard says, something like that will change an NFL game. It's just a matter of making it happen. So, as I said, somebody had to stop the tape right there and point to Big Bill and say, this is what we're all about.
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually in the defensive unit room. That was the first thing that we watched when we got in there on Monday. You know, because that time in the game, kind of what they were doing on offense, they were driving a bit. That comes down to straight pride, to be honest with you. That comes down to, you know, willing our team, you know, to have a chance to win at the end of the game. And like we said, man, Big Bill, he was actually fighting off a double team and popped off and just put his helmet on the ball, man. And like I said, when a dude like that can hit a running back, you know, good things for us normally happen. And he's able to make a big time play for us. So it was a play that was needed for sure.
Wednesday this week was Tim Jenkins Day. Our quarterback whisperer explained how he would go about fixing the Bears offense.
The first thing we're addressing is protections, right? And it's not even true. You're gonna get beat one-on-one in the NFL, right? If every offensive lineman never got beat in the NFL, we would pay defensive linemen $500,000. Instead, we're paying them millions of dollars as well, right? So it's like, we're going to get beat every once in a while on a one-on-one. Where we can't get beat is like a simple, you know, hey, we need to bump. We need to communicate better on these twists. And then the protection issues where it's like we had guys running free and, hey, is he supposed to be a hot? Caleb, are you supposed to manipulate the mic? Those are the number one thing. Boom, we have to address it. The second thing I'm doing, though, is we're getting super creative formationally, because what Chicago is doing, like every team that has a rookie quarterback, they're reloading a bunch of concepts, meaning they have their third and long. They only have four instead of the traditional nine, right, that you carry into a game. They have four, and they're dressing it up formationally. But to me, it's like going from 2x2 with a simple motion to 3x1. That's not enough, right? It's not enough of a dress up to fool an NFL defense. We need to get real exotic with our formation. So to me, it's like formation creativity would be my second priority. Hey, let's get super creative with these formations. We'll keep the concepts the same so our receivers know what to do. That's a new unit, right? Our quarterback knows what to do, but we're going to dress it up. We're going to, hey, here are the 12 formations you're going to learn, which is way easier to learn than a new play concept. And then we're just going to dress it up formationally. And I think there's a lot that you can gain from that. And then I also think we need just growth from... I don't want to say creativity in the pass and run game, but we need growth in the kill game, because we saw Caleb out there. He was killing, alerting. We need more growth in, hey, get us in and out of the right run play based on the look, right? They give us two high, let's run it. They give us single high, let's throw it. That's where I'd like to see more growth and then put more on him, because it looked like Caleb could handle it from what I saw on tape and then what the Sunday night broadcast kind of was showing, you know, audio-wise.
Jenkins had a detailed explanation on how he would force defenses to get out of the too high look that's become the trend in the NFL.
We're seeing too high at a huge rate, which is impacting all these passing numbers, like you're saying. I think what hurts him the most is the fact that we don't force any single high, right? To me, the way you beat this too high coverage is you kind of like put your pride aside and you turn on some San Fran and you turn on some Miami Dolphins, and it's like the Dolphins in prime time, like completely dump the bed so nobody wants to watch them. But go back to their week one and see what they did motion wise, because to me it's like two shell from an integrity standpoint is actually somewhat tough to run on too if you're stagnant or if we're in a traditional set. If we're gonna, hey, line up in, let's say we're gonna get into 21 personnel, but then we're gonna show you 2x2, right? So meaning, hey, we got two backs, one tight end. So we're a little heavier. You're going to have to go base. But instead of lining up in a traditional 21 formation, hey, guess what? Let's go ahead and bump Cole Kmet outside. He's now a stand-up guy. And let's go ahead and put our like hybrid, you know, F, who's like a hybrid fullback tight end. We'll put him in the wing formation. And then guess what? Okay, we're going to shift and we're going to get into flank. So we're going to bump Komet in. We're going to get our F over there. And then we're going to run a four-man surface run at you. And everything that you do when you do something like that is you go, okay, it's not about our standpoint. Our standpoint is shift. We're going to get to a four-man surface. We're going to run it at you. What's hard from a defensive standpoint is think about if we get into 21, we force you into base. So now I'm a big old Sam linebacker. But, and I'm thinking, all right, man, I'm going to go pound run. Oh, guess what? Cole Komet's standing up. So now I'm thinking, what's my pass assignment? I walk out there, and then boom, they shift to, now we're in a four-man surface. So now I'm yelling, hey, hey, bump, bump. I got to go walk up on the line of scrimmage, and before I know it, I'm getting whammed, right? And then we're running it at. Those are the kind of things that, to me, you see San Fran do it. You see some of these heavy shift teams. You see Minnesota do it. It's a creative way to get to attack with the run game, these two high defenses. And then guess what? All of a sudden, to me, it's like amazing to me. Every time I turn on Miami, I turn on San Fran, I turn on Minnesota, these teams with explosive playmakers, right? Someone you think traditionally you'd never want to be in single high coverage against. They're getting single high coverage because you only have so many checks as a defense at your disposal to account for, you know, the ways that they change strength on the line of scrimmage, the ways they motion. So to me, that's how we get creative. We got to, I think, get heavier in our personnel, but use that heavy personnel in a spread set to begin with. Every once in a while, quick snap them, we'll throw a quick game, and then spread them out, and then boom, we're going to shift. We're going to get into a heavy set. We're going to run right at you, and we're going to make your linebackers talk to each other and go from, hey, I'm standing up in coverage to, hey, I'm the point guy on the line of scrimmage. That, to me, is how you attack the two high if they're going to give it to you, and then in hopes that eventually they give us single high coverage.
And members of Wham. I missed that one. Thursday, Matt Bowen said his biggest concern for the Bears offense is obviously their inability to run the ball.
Right now, they're a very zone-heavy run team. They're getting beat across their face on reach blocks. They're not creating movement up front. They're losing one-on-ones. What's that? What does that do to the running back? Now the running back starts to press. Instead of attacking daylight, getting north-south for the football, they start to bend or to bounce the football. And that's what you're seeing a lot with DeAndre Swift. Getting the ball and bouncing it outside to the edges. It's hard to do in the NFL. Very hard to do because they're going to cut off the football. They're going to set an edge. That's what good defenses do, like the Houston Texans. And I looked at the numbers today. Obviously, you can look at the total pass attempts from Caleb Williams, but he dropped back 48 times. 48 times, guys. That's a lot to ask for a young quarterback, especially against that style of defense. And look what DeMeco Ryans and Houston did. They started to dial up the heat. They gave a lot of different fronts for the Bears pass protection, loaded fronts, you know, even fronts where they're dropping guys into coverage. A lot of twist and movement up front. They really threw a lot at Caleb Williams. So when they're doing that to a young quarterback, if you can't counter that with the run game and allow him to relax a little bit, this is what happens. This is what it turns into. And you see an offense that's absolutely disjointed in the pass game, cannot get the football down the field, and cannot extend drives because there's just too much pressure on the quarterback.
Never let it be said we didn't get you ready with a solid wall of sound. Thanks to Adam Studzinski for that. Right now, callers 6 and 7 to the Scores contest line, 312-540-0670. We'll win a pair of tickets for Mully and Haw's broadcast next Wednesday from 5:30 to 10 a.m. on the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. They'll be joined by Arturis Karnišovas and Billy Donovan at the 8 o'clock hour, brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois through it all and by Schmaltz Deli, spreading deli goodness everywhere.
This is where you say something about egg salad, right?
Oh, they're bringing it.
Okay.
No, I believe me. They're bringing it.
Okay.
Thanks for a fun week, man. It's really, really fun.
It's been a good time. I hope that the good times roll through the weekend. And I think, you know, I mean, noon Eastern time, 1 o'clock Central down in Indianapolis.
Football Monday will be breaking it all down for you on these airwaves. Thanks to JJ Stankovic, Joe Ostrowski, Kevin Fishbane, Ray Diaz, Tyler Farengold, Brandon Fryer, Connor O'Donnell, Kevin Lapka, and all that. Cubs baseball straight ahead.